Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
All right, come down off the ledge. Come from, get off the ledge, all right? Come on back in the window here, all right? Come back in here in the playbook with us. You know, just pay no attention to the big beast behind the curtain. Pay no attention, you know, to the New Orleans Saints. Pay no attention.
I thought he was going to say the big beast behind the glass, and I was going to get offended.
Wait, by the way, John, you're talking to me or you're talking to the audience?
I'm talking to Patriot fans. That's who we got to talk to. Because those who are with us today, Eric, as you know very well, and by the way, Eric Scalavino, PFW, with us here in the first hour of the playbook. You know, I understand if somebody's listening today, they probably want to hear what our take is on what transpired on Monday night. And it sort of turned into a, you know, bashing session, certainly. And what I just had to tell, you know, the PFW guys a couple of minutes ago, you know, I guess could be construed as piling on and feeling the same way. I don't really. And let me see if I can clarify. First of all, last week, the one show that we had on Tuesday before the Thanksgiving holiday, and by the way, I trust that your holiday went well.
Yes, thank you, okay, John.
Good,
how about you?
Good. Always very quiet, which I liked. But the last thing I said to our listeners was that I don't have a good feeling about this game because I really thought the Saints were on an emotional roll. I think that, you know, the fact that they hadn't really been in the spotlight much shouldn't be too much of a problem here. And I picked the Saints to win the game. So the fact that the Saints won, not a surprise. I thought the Patriots would be 7-4 going into this game. And when we were at the bye week a few weeks ago and the team was 5-2, did we not say that, you know, this team was going to be either 3-2 or 2-3 coming out of this very tough five-game stretch, mm-hmm. and that the pivotal game was probably going to be at Miami. Did we not say that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, technically, we're on schedule, as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
we are.
Yes,
we're on schedule.
Yes,
now,
yes and no.
But here's the problem, and I know this is why you're coming up with the, well, because the way the team looked on Monday night and the glaring errors committed by, number one, the secondary. I mean, did Brandon Merriweather, did he ever put on a jock strap before Monday? Of course he did, but he didn't play like it. Brandon McGowan, same thing. Jonathan Wilhite, please. He didn't look like he'd ever known what a football was on Monday night, prior to Monday night. Tom Brady, I just mentioned that. He was awful Monday night. Doesn't mean I think he's an awful quarterback. He had a bad night. It all conspired, plus the fact that you're going up against a dynamite football team, a team that, you know, reminds me a lot of the Patriots in 2007,
mm-hmm.
although I think the Patriots 07 team had a better defensive unit than the Saints do. But it did remind me.
I'm not so sure about that.
I think so. I think overall I think they do. But fact of the matter is that, you know, it's neither here nor there. We have to deal with the present. We can't go back to 2007 and say, gee, why aren't we like this? We're not. The one thing that I'm left with here, Eric, is I'm going to go back to something that I've been harping on all season long. Those that have listened to this program are going to hear this for the umpteenth time. But I think it's coming to roost here. And I mentioned this, and I know you guys talked about it in the last hour of the program there. But general manager Belichick did head coach Belichick no favors at all when he, A, included Mike Vrabel as part of a deal, you know, with Kansas City, and B, decided to cut bait with Richard Seymour.
Well,
I just really believe strongly that, I've been a proponent of this, that when you have superstars on your team, and I'm speaking specifically of Brady and Moss, and they're in their prime, and these are clearly the two guys on your team right now that you've built around or you need to build around and you need to take advantage of in order to win championships.
It's the identity of the team right now is the offense.
Okay.
And those two guys, and Welker, I'd say, in particular.
They embody the identity of the team.
Yeah.
Okay, so why wouldn't you do what you can to bolster up the weak points of this football team to ensure that those two or three players can lead you to another championship while they are in their prime? And General Manager Belichick failed miserably to that end.
He's always held to the notion that it's better to get rid of somebody too early than too late.
Mm-hmm. I understand that.
And I think he subscribed to that notion again this offseason.
I get that.
With those players you mentioned in particular, with Vrabel right. and with Seymour, and you know, even in the defensive backfield, you know, a couple of years ago, letting Samuel go. I mean, not that Samuel was near the end; he was actually in his prime, I think, and he was
right.
playing
his best football. He had priced himself pretty much out of the market. What the Patriots were willing to pay,
what they were willing to pay for him. So,
right.
And I think you know, with like we also mentioned. He probably expected that Brewski was probably not going to be here for much longer and maybe had a hint that it would be when it happened in August. And Rodney Harrison retiring. And I think he saw all of this and he said, you know what, we got to rebuild at some point. And if all these things are happening, let's just do it now.
Well, but you have offensive players in your prime. You still have what we thought at the time was a reasonable – opportunity to win another Super Bowl, to further cement your legacy, to continue winning. Basically, that's the bottom line. Isn't it all? It's this. This is not about, well, we want to be competitive in 3 years. Okay.
Well,
I think that's crap.
I think that is absolute crap. I think
nobody
part of it
in
is
the
that,
NFL
John.
Operates like that.
Well, I think Bill's a little different. I think he does look at both long term and immediate.
And I'm telling my opinion is it's too far-sighted. You have to win now. This game is about now. And when you have a team built for now, you need to optimize the advantages in having a team that can win now and support the team that can win now and not cut bait worried about not being able to afford a player 2 years from now.
Well, but I also think he felt like he could get better production out of maybe some of the younger guys, and if he's going to have anything, any sort of foundation for the future, I think he wanted to get it started now. I mean, yes, they probably would have some better production out of Vrabel than they've gotten out of Derek Burgess or anybody else, Pierre Woods, any of those guys that they've had opposite Tully Vantacane this year. But I think he felt like he was making the moves that he thought were right for this team at this point. I mean, even if they had Vrabel here still, you really think they'd be any better than they are right now?
I'm not sure that we can ever 110% answer that question. All I would tell you is that I think that they would have someone who has the capability and the know-how to edge rush, which this team sorely needs, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you'd have another vocal leader in the clubhouse. And I heard a couple of emails from earlier wondering why, you know, Junior Seau is on the team. Are you serious? Has he read any of the stuff that's been online or in the newspapers? The players rever Junior Seau. They listen. I mean, when he opens up his mouth, people shut up to listen to him. He's that respected in this clubhouse. In fact, some of the younger players were saying have already said, this is what we've been missing.
He's also
saying that Mike Vrabel was very much a Junior Seau type of player in that clubhouse, and that maybe Mike Vrabel could have added to that veteran presence in that clubhouse. This is a team that has no rudder to lead it, no emotional rudder to lead it. Seau has operated that, even though he's somewhat limited in scope, obviously, on the field. And when you gave up Vrabel and when you gave up Seymour, that rudder started to wobble back and forth a little bit more uncontrollably.
Well, I see that point, John. I just think that no matter how many vocal leaders you have in a locker room, you still need players of the ability to make plays on the field. And
yeah, you're right.
You know, as enthused as they can be hearing a great halftime or pregame speech by either one of those guys, they still need to go on the field and make the plays, and they haven't been able to do that. And no amount of pep talk is going to change that.
And that's still part of, you know, general manager Bill Belichick's problem here. Okay? He has not fared as well as anybody would like him to have in terms of player evaluation. You can lay that on Belichick, you can lay it on Nick Caserio, you can lay it on Floyd Reese, you can lay it on anybody you want to. Fact is, is that some of these guys that they've picked up haven't panned out.
No,
Burgess,
that's absolutely right.
Thomas, Pierre Woods, you've mentioned. You know, it's unfair to label any of the rookies, I think, in that realm, simply because you can't make an accurate judgment on a year. I just don't think you can. But those other guys I just mentioned, I think you can make an accurate assessment of.
Yeah, and
yeah,
well,
yeah. Call it what it is. Call it what it is.
They're
failing.
You have a second round pick in Ron Brace, who you expected at that high a pick was going to be a contributor this year. He's been inactive for the majority of the year.
All right. Well, then, if you want to throw Brace in there, fine. You can throw Brace in there too.
Again, it's early in a guy's career, but if you invest that high a pick on a guy.
He should be more than an inactive guy. He should be in the rotation. He should be in the rotation. Let's face it.
A healthy scratch, too.
Yeah, I know. But he should be in the rotation if he's that high a draft pick.
If you give up a guy like Seymour.
I'm with you on that. All I'm saying is here is that there have been some high profile misses here, more so than high profile hits. Is that fair to say?
I think it is fair to say.
Okay. So I'm going to get back to my overall point here, is that this is exactly why I do not believe a coach/general manager is the right way to go, even though it seems to be that's the trend with throughout the NFL with some of these guys who have uber egos, Mike Holmgren for one.
Mm-hmm.
The best way to team up is to find two like-minded individuals, mm-hmm. one to work off the field, the other to work on the field. Hello, Scott Pioli and Bill Belichick. That's how it worked. That's how this team was built. That's how this team won championships. Guess what? We don't have that anymore. And, oh, by the way, anybody notice how bad the team got beat on Monday? Now, I'm not saying that's a direct byproduct of Scott Pioli leaving. I'm just saying it signals a disturbing trend that doesn't seem to me to be getting better anytime soon.
Well, I don't think I ever thought that Scott Pioli was part of the equation for why things were going well or going bad, and I still don't. But
he handled player evaluations as his primary job.
You know, him specifically, putting in the equation. But I think your point is right that it's better to have separation in those two.
Sure it is, because general manager Bill can cloud the view of Coach Bill, and Coach Bill certainly can cloud the view of general manager Bill.
Yeah. No, I agree with that point.
You need that separation in order to make unbiased, down-the-middle-of-the-road decisions, because your decision-making process is clouded. You know, do we go and get this guy? Well, no, we're not going to go with this guy because I really like this guy. Why do you like this guy? Because he's really busting his ass in practice. Mm-hmm. Well, hello? You shouldn't have to make that decision.
Yep.
Somebody needs to stand apart from that and say, regardless of so-and-so busting his ass in practice, he isn't getting the job done, I'm going to find another player.
Mm-hmm. No,
you see how that can get clouded?
No, I absolutely, John. I absolutely agree with that.
So here's this isn't going to change, okay? It's not going to help us this week against Miami.
It's not going to help us the rest of the year.
Obviously, I'm saying the collective us. I'm not strapping it on, thank God. If we were, we'd be in real shape, and I'd be, you know, my family would be planning for my funeral next week. But you know, here's the thing. This isn't going to help the team with Miami. But what I think we all need to realize is we need to look at this now, and this is why I kind of started the way I did, program telling people to come off the ledge, come out of the window, you know, come on back in here. We're in the playbook. We're amongst friends here, right? You know, we're trying to talk this through. Now, you can certainly disagree with my opinion here. That's fine. I fully expect it. There are a lot of people, I'm sure, that are on the bandwagon, that are Patriots fans through thick and thin, teams going through a rough spot, yada, yada. But here is, as best as I can, give you my opinion on why this team has arrived at this point in time the way it has. Now, this doesn't mean that this team can't rip off five in a row. I think they can.
Oh, I think they probably will, too.
They very well might. If they can get by somehow, this is a pivotal week. You know, this is maybe as close as to a must-win the Patriots have all year, mm-hmm. this week in Miami.
Well, I kind of thought this past week against the Saints was a must-win because...
I didn't. No.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because you said earlier, the point you made at the top of the show was that after they were 5-2 with the bye week, we said we're kind of on schedule to where we predicted that they would be at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of threw out a, well, And the reason I threw that out there was because in my prediction, I had them winning either at Indy or at New Orleans.
Okay.
And losing maybe a division game either to the Jets or the more likely the Dolphins.
But you
and
do
having
admit,
those two
though,
losses.
In the end run here, the more important win for this team is within the division.
No, I don't.
Why?
I don't, because
that's a tiebreaker.
To me, they're going to win the division. Whether or not they win or lose a game in the division is irrelevant to me. They're going to win the division.
But
the more important,
they win Sunday, Eric, they shut Miami out. They've got no hope.
I realize that, John, but the Dolphins are not an elite team. They've played three teams that
aren't either.
That's my point. They've played three teams that either are or at the time were considered elite. Denver, Indy, New Orleans. They lost to all three of those teams. On the road, they had leads at one point or another in the game. They lost all of those games. The reason why those games are more important to me is because those are indicative of how a team will play against elite teams in the playoffs.
Okay.
And if they can't win those games, they're not going to win playoff games.
On that same topic, when was the last time that the Patriots beat an elite team? Do you have to go all the way back to 2007?
Well, that was only 2 years ago, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, last year, you can kind of throw last year out of the books because I think...
Right, you got all that you could have gotten out of last year.
You got all you could have gotten out of last year, and even, you know, it was almost fitting that 11-5 didn't get them in the playoffs last year, given all that they went through. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The letdown from Super Bowl 42, Brady going down with his knee...
Right.
Castle overachieving, getting them 11 wins. I think it was so much to ask out of last year. I think last year you kind of can just brush under the rug. You have to go back to 2007 when they beat Indianapolis at Indianapolis as beating an elite team.
Sure.
I mean, because even the playoff teams they beat, Jacksonville, San Diego was,
No, yeah, I'm kind of with you on that. I understand your point of view. I'm not sure that I see it quite that way, but I certainly get it. So, you know, the bottom line is that, you know, this is the next, you know, need-to-win, if not must-win situation. Because now, if this team loses at Miami, which has traditionally been a very difficult place for this franchise to play over the years, no matter how good this Patriots team
has
been,
yep.
You fall to 7-5. Miami becomes 6-6, and by the way, did the Buffalo Bills do us a huge favor, or didn't they?
Oh yeah, they absolutely did. Yeah,
they absolutely did. We're in Buffalo's debt and gratitude right now, because Miami won't have. I mean, I was
they
just waiting
be playing
for
first place. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, Miami, if they had beaten Buffalo, this would have been for the division lead.
Right.
But still, the worst the Patriots come out of Sunday, even with a loss, is a one game lead in the division.
Right.
But what you've done though is with four games left to play, with a month left in the season, you've breathed life back into both Miami and New York, and so they have a chance to snuff that out. I'm talking about just for this season.
Yeah.
They have a chance to snuff this out and then try to right the ship for the last four games and build up some momentum to where, you know, hey, by that, you know, second week of January when they'll be playing on Wild Card Weekend, they'll have an opportunity to challenge again the elite of the conference first and foremost.
Yeah.
And a chance to make a statement. That's the bottom line here. They still have a chance, no matter how miserably they played on Monday night. And they played horribly. It's one of the few times I can remember since, we're talking pre-Bill Parcells era, okay? So it's probably been 16, 17 years, and I've been with this franchise for 17 years. I've got to go back that far when I can remember this team not really having hope. And this team still has that. In fact, they've got a great shot at doing some damage in the playoffs, depending on how everything turns out. I'm sure there are a lot of fans that are just licking their chops over having another shot at the Colts again.
Yeah, I said this on the other show. Yes, there's a chance. I think it's a minute chance, and I don't like their chances based on what I've seen to this point.
Well, based on what we saw Monday.
It's not just Monday, John. It's what I said before. They've played three good teams, very good teams, at the point that they played them, and lost each time.
Mm-hmm.
The first two times it was the first game was tight, came down to the end, they made a few mistakes, lost in overtime. The second game, they had a huge lead, they melted down. The third game, they just didn't play well all night. That's a bad trend. That's trending in a bad direction.
Yeah, it's a bad trend, but I would argue, you know, a couple of things. Number one, I'm not ready to put the Denver Broncos in the elite category.
No. I said at the time they were 6-0 and they were considered an elite team.
Yeah, I know they were 6-0 when we played them, but
they were considered one of the best teams in the conference at that point.
Maybe. I would just say that was more. I'm willing to write that one off as a brain cramp more than anything else. The two games against the Colts, which was a meltdown, and the game against the Saints, which was a complete and total non-factor. Those are the ones that worry me the most, because we and fans and the media, our perception of this team is with the elite teams in the NFL, with the Colts, with the Saints, with the Vikings, you know, with the Bengals, with the Steelers, whomever you would consider elite right now. And they've fallen well short. Well, not well short. Let's just say they had a big meltdown. They're still right there with the Colts, I think, even with the meltdown. But the Saints game is what is causing us to have all of these feelings altered somewhat, because they came in and had such a glaring screw-up against the Saints. It's kind of like, wow.
Well, I got to be honest with you, John. I started getting those feelings at Indianapolis. I mean, it started getting me a little concerned after I saw that meltdown, and I started thinking, if they don't beat the Saints, I'm not going to feel good about the rest of the season. And I kind of started getting that feeling at that point, because the offense was just starting to click at that point, and the defense hadn't really faced any serious competition to that point.
Wasn't it just before... was it just before the Colts game? I'm trying to figure out what the timing of this was. Where we were talking about the defense and saying that surprisingly they've been pretty good this year?
Yeah, it was about at that point. It's about at the midway season, because...
All right. So what's happened to change that? We've seen, you know, a continuation really of a non-existent or a sporadic at best pass rush. And what we've missed in this time is, you know, an effective Jarvis Green, who, by the way, is back in the lineup now, but, you know, I still don't think he's where he needs to be. And we've had the re-inclusion of Jerod Mayo in the lineup.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're worse with Jerod Mayo back in there. So here's what I'm thinking, and this is based on following football for a number of years, and I think you can speak to this as well as anybody, having played the game. This is still an issue of chemistry, and it's still an issue of making certain that everybody is on the same page. And, you know, when you have to – this team has had to readjust, make slight readjustments in personnel and I think in philosophies two or three different times already this season. And because of that, and now we're re-including guys like Green and re-including guys like Mayo in the lineup, I think there is a period of readjustment that this team is going through. When you couple that with the fact that Merriweather and McGowan and Wilhite had horrible games, and everybody's entitled to a horrible game, it just so happens they all three had one at once, which really does suck, because, you know, that just spells disaster.
Yep.
You know, you like to think that, you know, hey, one guy has a horrible game, the other two guys can pick you up, right? Mm-hmm. But to have both of your safeties blow coverages like they did, I mean, that's just extraordinary. And so when you couple those bad games with this, you know, transitory state the defense is in, getting healthy bodies back in, it led to an unmitigated disaster. So I'm willing to allow this as a one-game blip on the radar screen, which is, again, why I'm putting a lot more marbles in the basket of Sunday's game at Miami. Not only because it means a lot in the division race, because you can shut the door on the Dolphins and probably the Jets, too, with a win on Sunday. But number two, they can take a huge step back toward respectability amongst their own fandom, in their own locker room, and maybe, and this is really where we shouldn't care, but maybe within those who opine around the NFL, if they can slam the door shut this weekend on the road, because winning on the road has been a problem. So let's get one first. And then once you get one, Then you can try to build back to that level. They've got four games in December in order to do that, and there's a very good possibility, you know, that when December rolls around, you know, the Chargers and or Colts are going to be on the docket somewhere, and there's your chance again. So this team is going to have a do-over. So let's just make sure that you begin to get the ducks in a row before do-over time arrives.
Yeah, it's certainly they need to win this week, and I think they will, despite the fact that they haven't played well on the road this year. I don't know if it does enough to boost the confidence like you said, in any of those areas that you mentioned. I mean, I think they were expected to win the division this year, even though the other teams made on paper some improvements to try to compete with them. And I think this is just sort of a taking care of business kind of thing. I don't know if it's gonna do much to help their confidence by in the eyes of other people.
Well, time is only gonna tell that. Time is only gonna tell that. I'm willing to put this game aside. I'm willing to call this an aberration still, even though I think we've probably seen signs that would indicate otherwise. But I'm willing to put that aside right now. And I'm going to give, you know, the veterans on this team a chance. I'm going to give Tom Brady a chance. You know, Lawrence Maroney was one of the few things that actually I was happy with on Monday night.
It's unfortunate that they couldn't go to him more in the second half.
No fooling. No fooling.
He's having one of his best games of his career.
I don't think I've said that ever about Lawrence Maroney, okay? So, you know, I'm happy to perform a mea culpa. You know, if he can continue playing like this and end up with, you know, 800 or 900 yards on the ground this season, I'll be happy to say I'm wrong. I'm begging for him to give me that chance, because based on everything we've seen through his first 2.5 years as a pro, you know, we've seen glimpses, we've seen shots, we've seen, you know, things that kind of get our hopes up, and then all of a sudden we get, you know, dancing and darting and, oh, my shoulder's hurt, and, oh, I got a broken clavicle, whatever we get. And I realize, you know, if a man's got a broken shoulder, it's hard to play with that. It's hard to hit tacklers head on. I get that. Mm-hmm. And this is where the whole injury secrecy thing doesn't do anything but hurt him, as opposed to helping him mm-hmm. by keeping his injuries private. You know, it just doesn't work that way in real life. Perception is reality. That's the bottom line. Now, the question is, what kind of reality here do we have for this team? And I think we'll take another step toward getting closer to realizing that reality when this team plays Sunday in Miami. So I think everybody understands that this is obviously nitpick Tuesday on a Wednesday here, since we had Patriots Monday on a Tuesday. But your emails are certainly welcome and encouraged. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us here on the program. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. If you want to call in, you can do that as well. We'll get to a lot of the emails. If you want to call, you can do that. We're going to save conference calls. And reporter press conferences and such for the last half hour of the program today. So it'll be after 3:30 p.m. Eastern time. We're going to let you hear, you know, those, and you can make up your own mind as to the direction in which this team is, you know, potentially heading. We're going to, you know, start kind of turning the page toward, you know, Miami, because that's what we'll spend the majority. In fact, that's what we'll spend all of the show tomorrow on, if not a little bit of it today. And then this team's just got to go out and produce. And if they don't produce, then next Tuesday when we come back into the playbook, you know, what's going to happen? Well, you know what? They're a step closer to oblivion, basically. And so how do we make, you know, chicken salad out of chicken feathers? And that's what we'll be talking about. Or we'll be talking about, all right, this team is finally back on track. We saw enough. They got a win. They got a road win. And they slammed the door shut on the Dolphins and the Jets within the division. And now we can concentrate on, you know, winning, say, 3 of the next 4 minimum, if not all 4, and building up momentum for the playoffs. Those, I think, will be the 2 options of the topics that we'll be talking about next Tuesday. And then we'll kind of take it from there. So let's sneak a break in here. John Rook with Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, and you are in Patriots Playbook.
Hey, Brian, it's Dad. I heard you won Patriots season tickets for life. Maybe we could grab a game together.
Who's this again?
It's Dad.
What kind of joke is this? You're not my dad.
No, I'm pretty sure I'm your dad.
Yeah, 3rd one today. Okay, Dad, tell me, when's my birthday?
Oh, come on, Bri. You won Patriot season tickets for life. You want to talk about your birthday?
I'm hanging up.
Don't hang up on your father.
Oh, yeah. They'll be coming out of the woodwork once they find out you won season tickets for life on a New England Patriots instant game. You could also win $1 million instantly, plus a boatload of other great prizes.
I could do one of those quick adoptions. We could go to the game together and talk about the old days.
We don't have old days.
Good point.
Bye, Daddy.
Pick up the new Patriots instant game from the Mass State Lottery, masslottery.com.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun and back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines back tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
The playbook for a Wednesday. John Rook with PFW's Eric Scalavino. Webradio at patriots.com is how you reach the program. 508-543-7482. Use the telephone number. All right, shall we weed through some of these, Big E? What do you think?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right.
People got a lot on their minds, I'm sure.
Yes, they do. All right, this one comes from Jay near Rochester. John, I guess my nitpick would probably be about the same as everyone else's. The defense in general and the lack of protection from the offensive line, while our D couldn't get near Breeze, the Saints seem to be all over Brady. I have agreed with you in the past that our offensive line is a better pass-blocking group than run blockers. That was not the case this week. I honestly did not expect to win this week, but neither was I expecting this type of performance. I did manage to find a couple of encouraging things from the game. I know he's been coming on lately, but I think this is a big step up for Mr. Maroney. Unbelievable here. This is my wicked twin brother, Jay, in New Rochester, I think. I don't think that I've ever seen him run as hard as he did in this game. I know he's had a few big games in the past, but he was actually running over people and knocking them back. At one point, I even muttered to myself, I don't know why they don't give it to Maroney instead of passing on every down. The second positive was the reemergence of Brandon Merriweather's arms. He has started to wrap up the opposing players instead of just going for the knockout.
Let me correct him really quick. The emergence of Brandon Merriweather's arms.
Yeah.
The reemergence implies that he used them before.
Yeah, he used them before. That's a good point. Although he had some great shots this week as well, it seems that the rest of the DBs, especially McGowan, have also been working on this. I still think we will win the division and that we can still go deep in the playoffs. However, I don't think we'll be far enough in the long run. I think that barring injuries, the Saints will be bringing a championship to the Bayou this year. Well, Jay, let's see if we can kind of take that apart. I mean, obviously, my major nitpick would have to be the overall play of the defense. I mean, I also am nitpicking about Brady's performance, which I thought was miserable. The offensive line's performance, which was below par. Let's see, the coaching.
Why do you say that about the O-line? In this past game in particular?
I realized that, yeah. And I think part of that is because it's probably unfair, but and I noticed that they didn't have Vollmer and they did have Matt Light. And you
know,
in the past
they did have Matt Light.
That's what I meant. And so they did have Matt Light this week.
Yeah.
And they didn't have Vollmer.
Right.
And the Lions struggled.
In what areas did they struggle? I mean, they gave up one sack.
Well, they obviously
the running game did well. Where did they struggle?
Obviously, my guess would be, or my take on that would be, that they allowed or they forced Brady from the pocket, getting him out of his comfort zone enough where when he would slip up into the pocket as he felt the rush come on, he was overshooting his target.
But see, I always thought Brady was always considered one of the best ones at stepping up in the pocket and making those throws.
Yeah, and he didn't do that.
But how is that the offensive line's fault?
Well, then
if he's not
feel like maybe he was rushing things and trying to get the ball to his receiver a little quickly because of the pressure that was coming in on him? I mean, doesn't that logically dictate that's why he was doing what he was doing?
Well, but I'm saying he's been known to do well in those situations in the past.
Okay. He didn't do it on Monday, so we're led to believe, well, why didn't he do it on Monday? Did he just suck, or was there a reason behind his sucking?
I think
is basically what I'm asking here.
I think he had a bad game overall. Okay. I wouldn't necessarily link that to the way the offensive line played. I know what you're saying. The fact that there was a little bit of a rush, he had to move around. He wasn't, you know, standing still in the pocket with the perfect protection around him. But I've come to expect that when the pocket breaks down, he's still going to find a way to make the throw.
Well, it's unfair to put that blame largely on Matt Light's shoulders because it doesn't deserve to be there. I actually thought that Nick Kazzer had, it seemed like to me like he had a better game than normal. I did notice a few times Stephen Neal lose out on his opportunity, and he got banged up
hurt
a couple of times.
Yep.
And so, I'm not so sure that even though he was back in there, that Stephen Neal should have been back in
there. I think that's more the concern, John, the fact that there's a lot of injury concerns on this offensive line, not necessarily the way they're playing.
Well, that certainly adds to the problem. And so I think it cuts back maybe then to a point of evaluation. Like, if a guy's able to go, great, put him in there. But if he's not able to go, then why is he going?
Hmm.
I don't know. It's just a feeling. Like I said, it might be an unfair assessment. But I didn't feel like it was one of their better games. And it just so happens that, hey, Matt Light happened to step back in for Sebastian Vollmer. And if it's just a coincidence, it's just a coincidence. And, the next week or two will probably tell, especially if we have a chance to get Vollmer, healthy again and get him back in there. Was he a healthy scratch?
Who?
Vollmer.
No, he had the concussion or the head injury, as they called it, from
right.
the previous week. I think they were being
cautious.
Careful with him.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then that makes sense. So he wasn't available. There you go. All right.
But I think, I'll concede that half of it, the pass protection half, but I'll say that they played well enough in run blocking because without that, Maroney doesn't have the kind of game that he was having.
Right.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think to an extent I would agree with that. Okay, I'll buy that. Brooklyn Matt is on the phone. Brooklyn Matt, welcome in the playbook.
Hi, John. Hi, Eric. How you doing?
What's up, buddy?
I guess I have a couple of points to make. I think maybe two concerning John. John, it sounds like you're flip-flopping a little bit. Because a few weeks ago you were saying that you didn't want to buy stock in the Patriots. And now it seems like after coming off a big devastating loss like this where they looked awful, you're trying to almost spin it in a way that you think their stock is pretty, okay, and that, the secondary and everybody is, capable of coming around. It seems like sort of like two different, slight opinions there. What's up with that?
No, I don't think it's a flip-flop. What I'm telling you is that they have an opportunity. If you had to hold a gun to my head right now, Matt, mm-hmm. I would tell you that I don't think they'll have any success. I would tell you that if they make the playoffs, which they probably still should, but as of right now, they're one and done. I'm telling you that I think they have the opportunity to improve, that maybe not all is as bleak as it seems, but that this week's game against Miami will go a long way towards solidifying what we all should feel.
I don't think, I personally think they're going to run the table through the ropes through a regular season. They went four at the end last year. I think they could do five this year. But with McGowan, Wilhite, and Merriweather, they almost look like Keystone Cops out there the other night.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of hoping that these people are just like embryonic versions of what Asante Samuel was when he first came up, and he didn't look, he looked kind of lost out there for the first few years as well. But I don't know. I hope, but as far as this year, those three improving, I just don't see. I don't think that's going to happen. I think their development is pretty much plateaued for the year. I think those problems are. I think that they're just not going to improve very much this entire year. And the way that Drew Brees was pump faking and looking off of looking off his intended receiver. I mean, it's really easy to get yardage against the secondary. And of course, with the with lack of a pass rush, I have a theory. I think Jason Taylor never intended to go to New England. In the preseason, I think he was using the Patriots as a bargaining chip.
Yep.
It's like his family's down there in Florida and everything, and he goes, well, you know what? If I go back to Miami, I look good. But you know what will make me look even better to the hometown fans? If I act, keyword, like I'm interested in New England.
And then
come home like a conquering hero
who
screwed over, the evil empire. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know one way or the other, but it wouldn't surprise me. No, not at all.
Yeah,
I mean, it's not unlike when Troy Brown flirted with the Jets before he announced that he was coming back here and retiring.
Mm-hmm.
It made him look that much better in the eyes of Pats fans because he didn't jump ship and go to, an arch rival and end his career there. He did sort of, he went there for a workout or whatever it was. There was some sort of contact between the two sides, but he ended up making the decision, no, I'm going to stay with the team that I've always been with. And I think that endeared himself a lot more to Patriots fans because he did that. Now, if he had gone to the Jets and actually played for them or, even just signed with them, that I think that would have done a little bit of damage to his Mr. Patriot reputation. I think he knew that. I wouldn't be surprised if Taylor was in a similar situation, although why would he have left the Dolphins in the first place?
Well, he went to, as you know, he went to the Redskins for a year, but I don't know.
But I'm saying, why would he do that? Why would he do that?
See, that doesn't make sense. I think it was two different mindsets in two consecutive years. As far as, let me see, what else? As far as the Patriots, I remember Troy Brown in the famous strip against San Diego in the 06 playoffs. I mean, that's probably what the Patriots are going to have to be like this year. And, if you look at the last 2 years, the Patriots have not had a convincing victory against a quote-unquote elite team since the 2007 AFC Championship game against the Chargers. Since then, they've lost to the Chargers last year, Chargers, Colts, Jets at home in overtime with that kick-ass Randy Moss catch on the last play of regulation. That was phenomenal, but they still lost it. And then we get Chris Baker, the touchdown maker, who caught the 3rd-and-15 in overtime. And it's like, well, where's that for us this year? And then they lost to the Steelers. They got in the rain that night in Foxborough last year. That's 0-4, and then this year, Jets week two, then Denver, who I agree with you, Eric, was considered an elite team.
At the time,
were undefeated at the time, and they've lost to the Colts again, and then just got annihilated versus the Saints. That makes them, they've lost 2 out of 3 to the Jets, and they're 0-7 against in the rest of those games. Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Looking at where the problems are on this team, they don't have a playmaker in the secondary. People are talking about Brandon Merriweather and all this stuff. He's not the kind of playmaker that, say, a Rodney Harrison was. Rodney Harrison was a big hitter, but he was also a sure tackler, and he made interceptions at key moments in the game.
True.
They don't have one of those guys anymore. They don't have an Asante Samuel.
They don't have a Ty Law.
Right. They don't have an outside linebacker slash defensive end pass rusher. Their best playmaker on defense right now is Vince Wilfork.
See, the key to the last bunch of Super Bowl winners in the late half of this decade was the teams always got hot that won the Super Bowl in the end for the most part and didn't play that well during the first, like, 11 weeks in general. But, I mean, who is going to step up on this team? The Giants had it in Justin Tuck, slapped the beard.
Their whole front seven was a pass rushing threat in that Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I mean,
it was Tuck. It was
Belichick gotten a few of those people here. I mean, where is it in the front seven?
I don't see it anywhere. I really don't. And on offense, you know, I think I have a little more confidence now in the offense being able to correct what's wrong with them, because they still have the playmakers that they need. They still have Brady. They still have Moss and Welker. Maroney looks like he's getting better, and they're getting healthier at that position in general. I think the committee approach is still going to be what they need.
Yeah, the play calling looks a little bit vanilla to me recently. Caller said that on EEI.
I also agree with that, by the way, Matt. I think you're absolutely right about that. And you also touched on the tight ends just a moment ago. And fact is, they actually threw to Watson.
Twice.
Gosh, what, two, three times?
Yeah, maybe? it was down in the red zone there, and they were trying to get a score. And
they threw to Watson
like two or three times in a row.
Yeah, but it's the first time in what, like 3 weeks that they've thrown to the tight end?
Mm-hmm.
Why has the tight end disappeared from this offense?
Yeah,
it's tough. They can key on these two receivers, and there seems to be lacking a third. It's like, I don't know about anybody else, but I miss Jabbar Gaffney. I mean, Greg Lewis and Joey Galloway. What was the reason for parting ways with Gaffney? I don't remember what that was.
Well, he signed a free agent. He was a free agent. He signed with Denver.
Okay. He has 39 catches this year in 10 games, and he torched the Giants on Thanksgiving night, too, for a couple of long receptions.
Yeah, I'm not sure I miss him specifically, but I miss the fact that there's not a third receiver who's a reliable, consistent player.
Yeah, or even a fourth like Stallworth. That was a killer, through four.
Right.
But
Stallworth was the three. Gaffney was four in that offense.
That's right.
I mean, I just miss any one player. I don't care who it is. It could have been Gaffney. It could have been Aiken or whoever. There hasn't been the one guy consistently all year. At that spot, it's been Gaffney, it's been Edelman, it's been Aiken, it's been Standback recently. And they're not getting any better at the spot.
I mean, one last point with Belichick, and he gets all these, just like half-rate players, like Burgess, Sean Springs had injury problems throughout his career. I mean, Fred Taylor was the same way. He brings these people in, and with Lewis and Galloway and Burgess, I mean, there's like five or six guys right there. And in the draft, I'm no general manager, of course, but it's like Belichick seems to me to be personality-wise, psychologically, almost like a kid who was who wants the most marbles at any gathering of children. He doesn't want to be the one with the biggest and the brightest and the most sparkly marbles in like first, which equate first and high second round draft picks. He wants just to have the most. And that's kind of like how I see him, as this slighted little kid.
Well, using that analogy, I want to have the Clearys. I could care less about all the other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly.
And we need players who can make plays.
EEI, whenever anybody calls EEI, almost every guy down to the last, they're like, they just want to like pick a flaw in a caller and just harp on whatever they don't agree with and try to make themselves look better and almost just ignore anything that they might agree with that a caller says. So, I mean, that's why I like you guys a lot.
Oh, thanks.
Well, we appreciate that.
Glad I don't listen to
Matt.
Them either.
All right. I mean, I'll talk to you guys in a couple of weeks.
All right, Matt.
All right. Thank you. Right. Bye-bye.
You bet. He brought some good points up, I thought. I just, sometimes it's not quite as cut and dried, but I think some legitimate points are there. Let's look at the, here's another email. This one comes signed Disgusted in Vegas.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Ready for this?
Sure.
I can sum up, he wrote, actually wrote this to the playbook last night. He was so disgusted. I can sum up last night's performance by the Patriots against the Saints in one word: horrendous. It looked like it was phoned in. Brady looked like he'd been partying on Bourbon Street since the plane landed. His passes were way off, like they were back in weeks one and two.
I can vouch for that he wasn't there. I was there. I didn't see him.
You were the one doing the partying.
Yeah.
My biggest issue was with play calling. It became obvious early that the Patriots' defense was having a lot of difficulty stopping the Saints, but the Patriots kept running and running. As the Saints started to pull away in the second quarter, the Patriots continued running and running. And go down 24-10 after halftime, they kept running and running. I saw no real attempt to try to come back by the Patriots. What is going on with the play calling? Is it possible that Charlie Weiss and Josh McDaniel had a lot more to do with the Patriots' success than we thought? Could Belichick have too much on his plate with calling offensive plays, too? And then every time the camera went to Belichick, he looked totally lost. Did they just give up? I really think the fans deserve some straight answers on this one. And he says, signed, Disgusted in Vegas, a Pats fan since 1960. Well, disgusted.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they gave up.
I don't think they gave up, but I think they kept running and running in the hopes that what they would do is control the clock and keep the ball out of the Saints' offense's hands.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that has a lot to do with why the team ran and ran. In fact, I kind of wish sometimes they had run more,
as we
alluded to earlier.
Yeah, when they got down in the first half, they stayed with the running game for a little bit, and I was actually encouraged by that. I thought, oh, you know what, they're not panicking. They're sticking with the game plan and trying to – and I actually thought that they were doing the right thing there in the first half, not panicking and not automatically going to the shotgun and firing it downfield. In the second half, was kind of the other way, though. They did kind of panic, and they got away from the running game a little bit. And I would think it might have been a little different if they had stuck with it a little bit longer.
Yeah. John in Dallas is on the phone. John, welcome into the playbook.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Hey, John.
Good, John.
Hey, I don't know if this is, my point of view is that the Patriots will not make the Super Bowl this year. For probably all the reasons you guys listed in the last, I don't know, hour or so. Right, the pass rush, secondary play, lack of a true third receiver, fourth receiver, or even a playmaking tight end. Spotty play on the offensive line, obviously due to a lot of injuries. Depth at running back, and just the overall competition in the AFC this year. I just think there's too many holes in this team for them to be any type of legitimate Super Bowl contender this year.
Well, I kind of agree with that, but I would have felt the opposite if they had won a game or two on the road, a big game or two. If they'd beaten Denver, if they'd beaten Indy, either one of those games, or even New Orleans, I would have felt like, you know what, despite all those things, they're still a good enough talent to win big games on the road. Despite all those things. But they haven't won those games. And that's why I'm so pessimistic about their chances, is because to this point, they haven't proven that they can do what a Super Bowl winning team needs to do.
But I think it's a collection of all those things, or at least maybe a subset of them, as the reason why they lost those games on the road, those close games.
Could be. Could be. It could just be that they don't have the horses anymore.
They don't. They just don't. I mean, I think if you look at the personnel top to bottom, they just don't have it.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys touched on PFW something about you were discussing Moss, if he's reached the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's really kind of tough to say. I mean, some plays it looks like he has, and other plays it looks like he's still got a lot in the tank. But
oh, he certainly, I mean, he still has the quicks. He can get downfield and burn pretty much any cornerback in this league. You don't see teams single him hardly ever. You know, Vontae Davis did a pretty good job covering him man-to-man. Darrell Revis has done a good job covering him man-to-man. Those are rare. I mean, most of the time you have a corner and a safety on that side of the field to shut him down. Mm-hmm. You hardly see anybody with the confidence to put one guy out there to cover him, because he can still beat you downfield. And the same thing with Welker. I mean, if you try to single him. They've tried with linebackers, safeties, corners. It doesn't really work. There has to be a combination of things there. You know, rushing three or four linemen and dropping everyone else back, some teams have been able to do that. But
I thought the Saints did a pretty good job of it on Monday.
And that was definitely a good example of it. They didn't really have a whole lot of blitzing. They sent their front four. And well, sometimes their front three. And they were still getting enough pressure. And I think that's, you know, not every team can do that, but the best teams can. And that's why the Saints are one of the best teams.
Yeah, it's funny because I heard a lot of people talking about, even the last caller was talking about vanilla play calling, right?
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, if you look at the offensive side of the ball, I don't know how creative you can get with what you got. I mean, you got Moss, who's a deep threat. You got Welker, who's a short threat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no one really to kind of fill that middle in. And if you take one of those guys out, if you take both of them out, you're done. They're done.
Well, I think there's actually a lot you can do, to be honest with you, John. And I think they did a little of that on Monday when they sent Welker in motion and handed off the ball and let him take it on a sweep. I think they could certainly look to the tight end again. I know Chris Baker hasn't had passes thrown to him, and he sort of led on, I think, a concern when he was on with Dale and Holly Patriots Monday, when he was asked about, you know, the passes coming his way, and he's very tight-lipped about it, and he basically said, hey, I'm just trying to do my job. But you could sense that there was a tremendous amount of frustration over the ball not being thrown his way or not being thrown the tight end's way. It's almost as if the tight end has been written out of the offense. So I think you could utilize that. And why wouldn't they want to utilize the tight end in the absence of a solid, dependable number three receiver?
Yeah, the tight end beyond the tight end could be that solid, dependable number three receiver if they used it that way.
And they don't.
And
so I
think
sticking with you can do.
Sticking with the run more would keep defenses more honest. You wouldn't have them always dropping back into coverage if they knew that there was a threat to run the ball on pretty much every play. And I think too many times they get away with it and they just go straight to the shotgun for most of the game because they figure that's where their strength is. And it is. That is where their strength is. But to have, you know, less of a vanilla play call, I think they have to use all of their pieces.
Right.
And I don't think they've been doing that as consistently this year.
Right.
I do agree with you guys. I don't know where the tight end's been in this offense. I mean, I was really hopeful when we played Buffalo that first game.
Mm-hmm.
With Watson's two touchdown catches, I said, wow, he could have a good year.
And you know what? He has had a pretty good year.
Yeah.
When they've thrown to him, he's made the plays more often than not. He's had very, very few
catchable balls
that he's dropped. Yeah, whereas in the past it was the inverse ratio.
Correct.
This year, when they've thrown to him, he's made the plays. And
haven't thrown to him.
Yeah, it's surprising. They haven't thrown to him as much as I expected after those first few games.
Any reason? Any
stupidity?
I mean, if
you're not getting open, I mean, what is it?
No, I mean, if we had those, I wish we had those answers because that would tell us what's bothering this Patriots team,
right?
At least offensively.
I tell you, I think one of the reasons why, maybe not the reason why, but I always say this about Randy Moss. I love Randy Moss, but I think he's kind of a blessing and a curse because Brady.
I'd rather have him than not.
I'd rather have him too, but I mean, how many times have we seen Brady force the ball to him, right? Or, you know, the Brady dropping back and having to sit in the pocket until a play develops because most of his plays are made downfield,
yep.
You know?
Yep.
It's just like, I don't know, it's like we've got a fairly good short game and a decent long game, I guess, once if we can hold the pass rush, but there's absolutely nothing in the middle of the field.
Wow. You know,
that intermediate game is almost gone.
Here's how I look at. I mean, this is all great minutia that we're getting into, but big picture wise, here's how I see it. We're witnessing the end stages of the latest NFL dynasty. It's been 10 years. Belichick's been here 10 years. NFL dynasties last a period of 10 years.
Usually,
Packers 60s, Steelers 70s, Niners 80s, Cowboys 90s, Pats in the aughts. These things have a natural end to them. And there's really, as much as we try to nitpick and dissect what's wrong, the fact is, this is nature taking its course. We're at the end, not at the beginning, of this dynasty. And there's another one that's going to emerge. I don't know which one it's going to be, whether it's the Colts, whether it's the Saints, or I don't know who it's going to be, but another dynasty is going to emerge in the next 10 years. I'd love for it to be the Patriots again, but in NFL history, that's never happened. There's never been a back-to-back decade dynasty. Does that mean the Patriots will never win another Super Bowl in the next 10, 15 years? No. I mean, it's possible they could do it this year. They could do it in another few years.
You could argue that the 49ers got close in the 80s and 90s.
They were about as close as you can get, I'd say. But at the end of the day, the Cowboys get that decade in the 90s.
Yeah, I would agree.
So I think what we're just witnessing is natural. You know, everything has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And I think we're at the end. We're seeing the end. And no matter what we try to do to, you know, give our impressions of what's wrong and how to fix it or whatever, players get old. Teams get old. These things happen.
Which is why, Eric, and this is I'm going to go right back to what we started this program with today. This is why GM Belichick did Coach Belichick no favors, because you had a chance to win this year, win a title, and you decided to discard some veteran players with an eye toward the future.
Maybe.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. Maybe. I agree with that completely. I mean, we lost. I'm not a humongous fan of Jabbar Gaffney, but he was I think he was a decent cog in the wheel, right? And we lost him for what, $500K?
I forgot what he signed for, but
was it that low?
I'm not sure.
We offered him.
Really?
We offered him $2 million. I think he signed for 2.5.
He was.
I mean, he's not. I don't.
Well,
think
that's kind of ridiculous.
Fantastic receiver, but he opened things up. You know what I mean?
Yes, I agree. When he left, I thought that was a big loss. I agree with you.
Huge loss. You know, and then everyone putting their eggs in the basket of Jason Taylor. I don't think Jason Taylor would have solved the problems of the team.
No.
I don't
either.
I think
my eggs were in Julius Peppers' basket.
Yes, mine too.
I just think there's a lot of problems with this team, and I agree with Eric. I think this is the beginning of the end. The question is, you know,
how quickly does the end come
when you start reaching the end? I mean, it looks like they started retooling on defense. Do you have to take the same approach on offense? And, you know, I'll throw that the question that probably nobody wants to talk about is Brady. Do you ride Brady to the end?
Well, that's a great question. Brady says he wants to play till he's 40.
Well, he says that. I don't know if that's actually what he really thinks.
But is it in the best interest of the team? You know what I mean?
At this point, I still think it is. I'd rather have him than almost any other quarterback. But you know,
this is great. I love it.
We'll see. Yeah, but at the moment, though, I have to.
I guess maybe if the right offer came, if a Herschel Walker offer came up, I would.
That's not going to happen again.
That's not going to happen. No, but I would have to do. I mean, but, if there's a serious offer, I'd have to look at it.
Let's draft Colt McCoy.
Oh, would you stop? On that note, I have to get out to practice.
Yes, I know you do. Well, John, thanks for the phone call. Appreciate it.
By the way, John, not John in Dallas, John in his basement.
Yes.
Thank you, John in Dallas, by the way, for the call. But I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, completely getting on a tangent here. I think Alabama's going to beat Florida.
Yeah.
You guys are obviously going to have your way with Nebraska.
I'm a little worried.
Big 12 title.
Eh,
don't be worried. You'll win.
You think Alabama is going to beat Florida?
I do, because I think they're the better team overall.
Well, now that the defensive end for Florida has been suspended for the game, he's been suspended.
Yeah, he was sleeping.
I should get Christina Acker on the phone right now.
Oh, get her. Fine. She's not going to be
anything
to contribute that would change my mind.
She's going to lose her bet. She's not even going to get a chance to compete.
Here's my question for you, though. If Alabama does beat Florida.
Yeah.
And Texas takes care of business with Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
Does Florida drop to 3? Or do they just flip-flop 1-2 and Alabama's 1, Florida's 2, and they meet up again in a month in the national championship?
No, they'll drop to 3, I would think.
So you think it'll be Texas-Alabama?
Yeah.
I'd like to think so, too.
They're close enough right now in terms of the overall BCS number where... Now, I could see that scenario happening where they would rematch if Texas lost. With all due respect to TCU, who certainly is deserving, I could see that scenario happening if Texas loses to Nebraska.
But if they win, you think it'll be Texas-Alabama?
Yes, I do.
I think so, too, but I have a concern that I think there's a possibility that
I don't think the poll voters will allow that to happen. I think Texas will be strong enough in all the polls based on, you know, them getting screwed last year. So
yeah.
I just don't see that happening.
Christine's
under any scenario, as long as they beat Nebraska. If they don't, then all bets are off.
I have a feeling it's going to be Alabama-Texas as well.
I do, too.
I just, you know, Mark May on College Football Final made a great point when they did their. You watch that show at all?
Yes. Yeah.
You know how they do the court, the final verdict thing where mm-hmm. Breece Davis puts on the puffy robe?
Mm-hmm.
Mark May made a great point this week in his argument for Alabama in the SEC championship game in that mm-hmm. if you look at the common opponents between the two teams, I believe it was LSU, Arkansas, Mississippi State were the three that both Florida and Alabama have played this year. Alabama won convincingly in all those games, and Florida won struggling in all those games.
That's
and
true.
I think if you look at the running attack, we've talked about Mark Ingram being the better one of the better Heisman finalists in the country. I think he is a legitimate he brings more of a legitimate running threat at the running back position than Florida has at the running back position. They have Tebow, obviously, who's a great runner, but he's their quarterback as well.
Right.
And if, God forbid, something happens to him, now you've lost your passing game and your running game.
Right. All right, well, I know you got to get off to practice, but we have somebody on the phone that wants to take up for her Florida Gators. Hello, Christina.
I got tipped off. You guys are having a conversation.
We are. We are, and it's not one that I think you're going to like, but...
It doesn't sound like it from what I hear Scalavino saying.
I think Alabama's going to beat your Gators.
You think so?
I think they're the better team.
Really?
I do. And for the points I just made, I think they have a better rushing attack. They're more balanced on offense. They have great playmakers on defense. And against common opponents this year, they've done much better than Florida has.
Really?
So ridiculous.
Auburn? That wasn't a very good game the other day.
That's not a common opponent, was it?
Yeah. Auburn, Alabama. It's a big rival.
No. Auburn, Florida.
You mean the ones that they've played
this year?
Similar. Okay.
This year, yeah. Their common opponents this year, I think, were LSU, Arkansas, and Mississippi State, correct?
LSU, Arkansas, Mississippi. I don't know. I don't have notes and or rosters and or bullet points in front of me.
Oh, neither do I. Neither do I, dear.
Well,
but
you must know more than I.
I didn't say that. I'm just saying I'm basing my my opinion on the game on what I do know. And what I do know is that Florida has struggled against those teams in wins, and Alabama has done very well against those teams in wins. And I know that Mark Ingram is a serious Heisman Trophy candidate. I know that they're
valid points.
I know that their quarterback is not the greatest quarterback in the world, but he's no slouch either, and he's gotten better as the season has gone on.
Isn't Ingram hurt? Is he playing?
I think he's going to play.
I think he's going to play.
I can't imagine he's not.
I don't think
play
he's 100%.
But yeah, I don't think he's 100%.
Yeah, well, Florida's defense is now going to have problems because of off the field issues.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Mr. Dunlap, but I don't know. Do you remember last year's game at all? You know,
yes.
It was definitely a good battle.
Sure was.
It took that's the problem too. I think Florida is not going to be able to let the first half. Last year it took them a while to get in some kind of rhythm, and they're going to have to attack right off the bat. They
mm-hmm.
They can't get behind. But yeah, it'll be good.
I just worry that if Florida loses Tebow at all, they've lost two parts of their offense. They've lost their passing game and their running game. And I think that's a lot to ask on one player, even a guy like him who's won the Heisman, who's really their offense. He is their offense. If he goes down, they're done.
Well, we definitely have the running backs, the receivers. The air game is not. I mean, has not been Florida's strength. We lost receivers from last year, but what is Florida's strength? I think in the air is Brantley. If that makes any sense.
Sure.
That kid's got a good arm and better accuracy in a sense. So, you know. I don't see Tebow going down. You're trying to jinx us now with talking about Tebow going out?
I mean, he's their offense.
I see
everything goes through him.
He's their team. Like
he is.
He's solid.
He's the
solid
identity of the team.
Yeah.
You know, whereas
do we need to adjust this bet, Christina?
Do we adjust the bet? What do you mean? You think I'm backing down?
I'm just asking.
Let's reiterate.
I think we should
the
throw out there what the bet is.
I think we should reiterate what the terms of the
I
bet are.
I think what it is. Please reiterate.
Okay, so if Alabama beats Florida, what do you have to do, Christina?
I believe it was
Texas
beating Florida.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
First of all, it's Texas
right.
beating Florida. If
that's
if
right.
Florida loses this week, the thing's off because Florida's
true.
Not in the game.
That's true.
So this conversation will take place next week when we discuss Florida and Texas.
Yes.
Florida
okay. Okay. Give us a little tease though. What would happen?
Oh, I don't even remember. I think it had something to do with some horns on my fingers.
The terms of the bet were if Florida wins the national championship over Texas,
mm-hmm.
John, on this show,
yeah,
during a crossover with Christina, we'll sing the Florida fight song.
I'll look up the words right now and print them out for John.
Wow.
If Texas were to beat Florida in the national championship game, Christina will sign off on a Patriots Today with a hook 'em horns and a congratulations message to the NCAA football national champions, Texas Longhorns.
I think you have to raise the stakes a little bit, too. I think she has to wear some burnt orange on the show.
I think she has to sing the dang eyes of Texas. That's what I think.
And John, I think if you lose, John, I think you have to wear Christina's old
Miami
cheerleading
uniform,
cheerleading outfit from
the
Gators.
What does that have to do with this? I'll bring
no,
my
you have a Gators one.
Pom-pom.
Don't you have a Gators one?
I have my
that's
my
what I'm talking
F
about.
Jacket and my pom poms and everything.
You have to wear those on a Playbook show.
That would be an
it's
ugly.
It's a good thing it's radio and nobody can see it.
That's why why I'm saying yes to wear it on Playbook. Nobody needs to see it, but we just have to know that he's.
We could put him on Patriots.
We're gonna have to call for a webcam. No,
we're
not.
Get a shot of that.
But you know what? Unfortunately, I'm going to leave you on this note. It's all going to be moot because Alabama's going to play Texas in the national title.
You're a Bama fan. I see what's up.
I'm not a Bama fan. I'm just looking at it objectively. I think they're the better team. That's
all. Honestly, I appreciate your the whole college football outlook and the discussion of it.
She's trying not to get mad at me.
Scalavino's into it. I like it. It's going to be a good game.
Yes, it will. Looking very much forward
roll
to
tide,
it.
Roll.
But Christina will probably choke Scalavino if Tebow gets hurt.
Yeah,
you've got
to watch your back, man.
I have to walk by their office as I go back upstairs.
Yes,
so I do.
Very
I
might go and not let by. Me hear you coming by here.
I might take the other way. I'll see.
All right. Well, we'll see. We will have this discussion later.
Yes, we will. Thanks, right. Christina.
Have fun.
You got it.
All right, John.
Eric,
I'll see you
thanks,
tomorrow.
Man. Talk to you tomorrow.
Yep.
All right, Eric Scalavino from PFW. Let's squeeze in a quick break here. I want to get some more emails in, and then we've got conference calls to get to inside the Playbook today.
So, Pat, what time does our flight get in?
It says here American Airlines Flight 505 gets in at 7:05.
Perfect. Game starts at 7:30. I suppose you know our gate number, too?
Yep. It says so right here on my phone, Brian.
Yeah, you think you know everything because you have one of those smartphones.
What's wrong? You're jealous because I can check AA.com, get flight info, gates and times, pretty much anything flight-related?
I like to keep it simple. You know, that's how I roll. I'm old school. So I travel with one of these.
Brian, that's a cordless phone.
Right. No cord.
From your home.
That's right.
How's that working out for you?
To be honest, the range is somewhat limited. But only when I travel.
Find all the flight info you need for the big game or the big meeting at aa.com/mobile. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter.
We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted.
What?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan.
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am.
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots Banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots Banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services N.A. Bank of America N.A. member PIC. Copyright 2009. Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
Man, it's football season. Usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon. So I don't just watch the game. I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the Playbook again, John Rook here with you on Patriots.com radio. We've got some more emails to get to, and then I'm going to start turning the page away from the Saints and more toward the Miami Dolphins. And coming up here in the next 10 minutes, we'll have our conference calls with both Jason Taylor of the Miami Dolphins and Tony Sperano, the head coach of the Miami Dolphins, to end the program today so we can kind of get ready for the game coming up this next Sunday, which obviously, as I said earlier, I think means everything to this football team. Ed writes in, good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm just writing to express my concern for the New England defense. Where is our pass defense? Why wasn't Drew Brees rushed as much as he should have been? Well, that seems to be the $64,000 question, Ed. Why were New Orleans receivers able to catch and run the ball as much as they did? Belichick is supposed to be a defensive guru. However, the defense looked almost as bad as the Chicago Bears when they faced Brett Favre and the Minnesota Vikings. I can't just put the defense down because our guard should have been holding their defensive line back a little better to allow Brady some time to get rid of the ball more accurately. Well, I think that's an accurate assessment, and some of the what Eric and I just talked about. It says, thanks for listening. Best of luck to the Pats against Miami this week. Well, you know, I think your concerns, Ed, are the same as basically any Patriots fan right now. Pass defense obviously had a horrible game. The rush defense was basically non-existent. And I think it's because the personnel is just wrong. Other than Vince Wilfork, you know, and occasionally we see a flash from Telly Bantakane, who really isn't a type A player. He's more of a backup, you know, situational player that's forced to play all the time because that's really all the Patriots have. You know, defensive line, okay, you know, well, Vince can't do it all. He's a remarkable player. Have had no problems with Vince Wilfork at all. But he's just, you know, he's not getting much help. Hasn't been a good year for Jarvis Green, who's been playing injured. Hasn't been a good year necessarily for Mike Wright. I think he's a little overmatched in that spot, although he's gotten better. I just don't think he's Richard Seymour. We're comparing everybody who would be in that situation to Richard Seymour in his prime, which we no longer have. You can make the argument that the Oakland Raiders certainly don't have either. Maybe that was why they let him go, but I, from what I'd seen in the past, it seems like Richard Seymour would be better than any of the options that we have right now. But, again, it's water under the bridge, so we're going to stop beating on that dead horse. Stripper says, John, you know what what team the Patriots are now? The 2009 Sooners. Great at home, horrible on the road. I don't really have an argument for that, Stripper.
Stripper sent you that? He's an
No, he's accurate. He's accurate with that one. He's accurate with that one. Guy, this one comes from Matt and Quincy. Guys, do you think it's possible for a head coach to be in a slump? From around the time of the 2007 Super Bowl collapse, this team, and Belichick in particular, has been very suspect when it comes to game management, clock management, player personnel, coaching strategy, etc. In my opinion, it has to be that or something that the rest of the country would like to believe, which is that the team has never been quite the same since Spygate. I realize they're 7-4, but in the Belichick era, I have never seen this team look quite so clueless as they have recently. I will admit, Matt, that I thought that this team was outcoached, and they've been outcoached in every big game thus far. They seem to have, you know, an advantage against the Colts, and then, of course, they couldn't make the right adjustments against the Colts. And then, you know, the whole 4th-and-2 happened, and that spoke volumes in terms of Belichick's ability to trust the defense. And we saw that again this past Monday. He doesn't trust the defense. You know, if I'm on that defense, I'm pissed off. But they didn't play like it on Monday. And that's a little discouraging, to be quite honest with you. That's a little discouraging. Andrew in the Ukraine. I think that the Pats are still in good shape to get to the Super Bowl. They should win out. And Cincy and San Diego will play each other. I think both of them will lose one game, giving the third seed to San Diego. Indy's going to host San Diego, who will then beat Indy like they always do. And the Pats will then beat San Diego like they always do. Well, not always, but I think I understand where you're coming from here. The Super Bowl is another matter. We can only hope that Favre or Romo makes it through. I don't know about that either. But it's nice to know that people still believe, okay? It's nice to know because this one doesn't. Okay, John, John in Dallas, I think this is the same John that called earlier. He says, Pats won't go to the Super Bowl this year. Here's why. Absent pass rush, secondary play is spotty, lack of true third wide receiver, four wide receiver and playmaking tight end, offensive line issues, pass protection, competition in the AFC is too good this year.
I don't see, and looking at those issues, no, I can't argue with any of those five. Competition is good. Offensive line has been inconsistent. Better, arguably, with Vollmer in there than Light. I would argue that we'd be better with Light over at right tackle and Vollmer at left when he becomes healthy. Lack of true receiver, third or fourth wide receiver? Absolutely. Playmaking tight end? Do we have a tight end left on this roster? You wouldn't know because they don't throw to him. Secondary play is spotty at best. Well, I think we saw that on Monday. I actually think they've been okay, but Monday's game, unfortunately, just totally and completely chokes my memory bank from the remainder of the year. They had one really rotten, stinking game, and it was Monday night. Other than that, you know, I'd have to say that they've had a decent year. Certainly better than what we saw last year. Absent pass rush, can't argue that point. How about no pass rush? No pass rush. Aaron in Pittsburgh. I have a couple of comments and questions about the Saints game. Why did they take Brady out with 5 minutes left? He does not come out when they're up by 28 with 5 minutes left. Is there something we don't know about? And he says, Matt Light looked decent, but the offense did take a step back with Vollmer out. Keep at it. We'll do that, Aaron. Thank you. They took Brady out with 5 minutes left because there was no point in going further with the game. That if he stayed in there struggling, there was a chance, that there was a chance that perhaps he could, you know, hurt himself. So
I couldn't care less about the team struggling.
Thank you, Joe. So I don't have any I don't have any argument with that. I that's one of the all-time best clips.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah.
Poor Susie Culver. Isn't that amazing, though? She's a pretty good reporter, you know, for what sideline reporters do. She's a pretty good reporter. Yeah, and that's all she's ever going to be known for. That does kind of stink.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
Huge compliment.
Yeah,
makes me laugh every time I hear it. Now, so I don't have any problem with them taking Brady out. I don't. All he was going to do was just, you know, possibly get himself hurt. Matt Leich, yeah, you're right, decent. But the offense, I would agree with you. The impression was that it took a step back with Vollmer out. So
must have been Todd Light playing this one and not Matt.
That's got to be it. Yeah, that's got to be it. Definitely it. All right. Very quickly, Joel in Merrimack, New Hampshire. Guys, I can't believe that people want to fire Belichick, but then again, that's what we are called, why we are called fans, or short for fanatics, people who wear blinders and only see what they want to see. The Monday night game was not a good one. Our defense was rather confused and slow to react, but what was worse was the play of our offense. A team managed to shut out both Moss and Welker, and Brady looked lost without him. Don't think we have another team left in the schedule that can do that personnel-wise. So I still think we win out the division. Still possible we get the second seed. Cincinnati does have a harder schedule, as do the Chargers, though doubtful. I believe we'll have to play a wild card game and have a good chance of winning it, but that is where we hit the wall. I think during the offseason we need to look at getting some receivers. Yeah, I would agree. Saints receivers reminded me a lot of the Chargers receivers. I'd like to see us get those type of guys anyway. Keep up the great show. All right, Joel. Good comments as well. Let's pause here for a timeout, and then when we come back, we're going to hear from Jason Taylor, who certainly flirted with the Patriots in the offseason and back with the Miami Dolphins again this year on the Dolphins' defense and defensive end. And we'll follow that up with Tony Sparano, head coach of the Dolphins, right here inside the playbook.
Just found out American Airlines flies to more than 250 cities in 40 countries. That's a lot of flying. So basically, that's 250 different things that I can put on my out-of-office auto reply. Why, I could say, island hopping in Hawaii, returning Friday. This is going to be fun. Better yet, swimming with whale sharks in Cancun back on... Wait, that sounds dangerous. Oh, I know. How about samba dancing in Rio back on Monday? Wish you were here. Well, not really. But with flights to over 250 cities in 40 countries, it's easy to get wherever I want to go on American. Even if it just happens to be sales meeting in Des Moines, not tomorrow.
What will you put on your out-of-office reply? 250 cities, 40 countries, unlimited possibilities. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good! It's good! That'll beat it, Terry!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' three Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4.
Yes, it's a dynasty. And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass., and is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehallatpatriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Well, actually, first, the Saints had success, like not many teams do, kind of stopping both Moss and Welker. As a defense, can you look at that and use that as any kind of blueprint? And if you have had a chance to look at it, what were they able to do against those two guys specifically?
Well, first of all, it's very, very difficult to stop both of those guys. You know, they are probably, if not the best, then one of the top two in their positions in the whole NFL. So I think what the Saints did well is they got some pressure on the quarterback a little bit, and then they tackled very well. I thought they covered well for the most part. They tackled very well. A lot of the times Wesson would take a short catch, and as you all know, and turn it into a 10, 12, 15 yard gain. And what I thought the Saints did very well was tackle and were very physical with the receivers coming off the line.
Were you guys encouraged at all by the job that Vontae did on Randy? And I know, obviously, Randy, you know, made his plays and everything else, but it seemed like Vontae was right there quite a bit. Were you guys kind of encouraged by the job that he did on Randy the first time around?
Yeah, I thought he did a good job. I mean, there's some plays he wished he could take back and do a little better, and I think there's some times we could have helped him out better by pressuring up front or rotating a little bit better. But, you know, he's a young kid. He's growing. You know, he made a big play early in the game up there with the interception, but you know, at the end of the day, Randy Moss is Randy Moss, and he's going to make plays. I mean, it's just a matter of how much can you try to contain him or kind of do damage control, so to speak.
How far along have those two guys, have Smith and Davis, come for you guys?
I think they're doing a really good job of progressing. You know, and it's still early. You know, they're still going to make mistakes, or they're going to make the young guy mistakes and get schooled somewhat on some of the veteran savvy things that receivers do in this league or offenses do in this league. But I think the great thing about both of them is their willingness to learn and listen. You know, they have the physical talent to do it. They have the mental makeup to do it. It's a matter of kind of staying grounded and humble and not getting too high on big plays and not getting too low when you get beat. And I think that's one of the things they've done really well so far.
Yeah, one more thing on that, Jason. Obviously, I know one of the cornerstones for your great defenses that you had earlier in your career were Sam Madison and Patrick Surtain. Do you see any of that in these two kids coming along?
You see the potential there. You know, and I'm obviously very biased to Sam and Pat because, you know, I played with them for so long and they were so integral, such an important part of my success as a player. So, you know, these guys have the talent to do it. They have a ways to go yet, and you know, it obviously took Sam and Pat some years to kind of round into form and be as efficient and dominant as they were. But you know, these guys definitely have a talent to do it. Now it's a matter of, let's sit back a little bit and see what becomes.
Jason, what has kept you guys from being as consistent as you wanted to be defensively?
Just not finishing. You know, our problem right now is finishing games, finishing drives, finishing series, finishing halves. You know, we've played so well at times, particularly in the first half of a lot of games. We came out in the second half, and for whatever reason it is, and you know, we're still trying to put our thumb on the exact reason, but for whatever reason, we haven't finished the games as well as we need to. You know, you sit here and look at a handful of games, and whether it be the Buffalo game last week or New Orleans or Indy or San Diego game, a lot of them were, even the game, you know, we played up there in New England, you know, we did some good things in the first half, it came out in the second half, it just didn't finish. You know, allowed teams to make adjustments on us and turn not adjust as well.
Jason, either by watching film or watching him firsthand, how impressed were you by rookie Sebastian Vollmer?
You know, I didn't get a whole lot of looks at him playing against him up there. I did rush with him a few times and didn't get a steady diet of him. But, you know, seeing him on tape and seeing him play against us and having played a handful of plays against him, you know, he's a good. I think he's going to be a good player. I mean, he's a big, strong kid. I think he moves very well. Didn't realize his story of not playing football all of his life and that whole thing. And you know, it's promising when you see a guy that moves and plays as well as he does that young. And to realize he's still kind of in his infancy as far as his football life is concerned. So it's you know, I'm not ready to say he's Matt Light, because I think Matt Light's one heck of a player, but he has the potential again to be pretty good.
Jason, Joey Porter has had, I think, 4.5 sacks in the last 2 weeks. Is that something he's doing better, or is the defense just freeing him up a little more?
Well, anytime you get sacks, it's a team effort. You know, I think it's part Joey kind of rallying into form and feeling better and moving around better. And I think defensively we're getting in some situations where we get teams behind the sticks a little bit and get a chance to tee off up front. And the secondary is playing well and covering down. You know, a lot of the times, you know, I've been blessed to get a lot of sacks in this league in my career, but the vast majority of those are because of guys like Sam and Pat. And all the corners and safeties that I've played with throughout my career, it's definitely a team effort. So, to answer your question, a combination of Joey playing better and feeling better, and I think the defense rallying a little bit and playing better in spots.
Jason, I think I read somewhere that maybe you've sacked Tom Brady more than anyone else, or I think that's a statistic. Is there something you really like about sacking Brady? I mean, is he really nice when he gets up, or polite, or anything like that?
You know, I've also played Tom Brady more than I've played anybody else, probably. So, it's I don't know what the numbers are. You know, maybe whether or not I've had more sacks against him than anybody else, but I know he's had more wins against me than I had against him, and that's the disappointing part. But you know, for whatever reason, we've had some good games over the years, the Dolphins and the Patriots, and have matched up reasonably well at times. So, it's you know, anytime you get a rivalry like the, you know, especially divisional rivalry like the Dolphins and Patriots, and you see each other twice a year, there's a sense of being familiar somewhat with players, with the blocking schemes, with the lines or whatever, and it just works out that way.
Jason, after the first game, because Bill was wearing a mic for a TV show, we could hear him say, you know, you're a great player to you, and that he thinks that you'll be in the Hall of Fame someday. What did that mean to you, and how would you describe your relationship with Bill, having played against him over the year and gotten to know him a little bit?
Well, what does it mean to me? It means a lot to me, first of all. I mean, it's to get respect like that from somebody like Bill Belichick is very flattering. It's humbling and very appreciated, because, you know, obviously I've said over the years how much respect I have for Belichick and a lot of the guys on that team and the organization and as a whole up there in New England, and to get those. To get a compliment from Bill like that, it means a lot. You know, he's I've never had a chance to play for him, but listening to him talk and how he carries himself in interviews, and from what I've heard, he kind of throws around compliments like a manhole cover. So it means a lot.
Have you seen the Patriots' run game evolve at all since the first time you prepared for them?
Yeah, I think Lawrence Maroney's playing better. I think he was nicked up earlier in the year or something, and. Whatever the deal was, but I saw him playing against New Orleans the other night, and I thought he ran very well. He ran hard, ran over the a couple safeties a couple times. And well, Sammy Morris is a guy we had down here. I know Sammy was hurt earlier in the year, and he was back in there, and we all know how Sammy is, the kind of player he is and how he runs hard and the things he can do as far as blocking and running the ball. So, and their offensive line is very efficient. I thought they ran the ball well against us when we played them up there. And unfortunately for us, we didn't respond as well in the run game as we had anticipated, and that's something we need to be focused on this time.
Jason, I know you weren't around last year, but obviously they were real healthy last year, and now losing Chad and Ronnie and Jason and Will, how do you think your team's dealt with the injuries?
Well, you know what? Injuries are going to happen. That's part of this game. We've all been around long enough to know that one year you may get lucky and not have many, and the next year you may get slammed by it. And that's why depth is always preached throughout the league, and in particular here. And I think we've had guys that have stepped up and responded very well. You know, we're blessed to have Ricky Williams when Ronnie went down. We had a great 1-2 punch, and unfortunately lost Ronnie, and Ricky has picked up that slack and done very well. And had a few guys go in by committee with Lex Hilliard and kind of trying to fill that role, and they're doing a good job. You know, it's tough to replace guys like that. It's tough to replace that Chad Pennington, but I think Chad Henney it's his team now. It's his turn, and I think he's growing up very quickly in a lot of situations. You look back a couple games ago where he forget who we were playing already, but made a come part of the we were playing late in the game where he had we were playing Tampa. He had a late drive with a minute or something to go after we threw a pick. And brought us back down the field and won the game for us. So it's times like that where you have to have talented backups that are ready and willing and able to step in and kind of carry some of the load and deal with the pressure.
Jason, given the respect you do have for Coach Belichick, do you ever wonder if things turned out differently and you did wind up here at the beginning of the year?
You know what? No regrets. I have no regrets. You know, I'm here in Miami. I'm happy. I'm home. You know, it's obviously it meant a lot to me that Coach Belichick and Mr. Kraft and the organization would have me. But you know, it was meant for me to be here, and I'll leave it at that.
Do you feel like your passion for football waned at all while you were in Washington, and maybe you've got that back now being back in Miami?
My passion for football didn't change at all. My enjoyment of it did in some ways. You know, it was, you know, being hurt, I haven't been hurt a whole lot in my career, thank God. And you know, I was hurt, and that was something I had to deal with, and being in a different place and, you know, different everything, different city, different team, different colors, different fan base, everything. So it was a tough transition, but, you know, I was disappointed that I couldn't help the team out more than I was. And I think there was a few reasons for that, and there were, you know, part of it was that I was hurt. But going up and playing in a position and a scheme that really didn't afford you the opportunities to do what you can do was disappointing. So it became more of a job for me than it was a passion and a hobby. But that passion is certainly there. The enjoyment's there, and I'm doing what I love to do.
Jason, I haven't played the Patriots once, and I assume studying quite a bit on film. How would you describe their offensive identity, and is it different this year from maybe years past when you played them?
I don't think it's different. I think it's easy for people to look at the team and say that the Patriots want to throw the ball around with Moss and Welker and Watson and all that stuff. I don't necessarily buy into that. I think the Patriots are willing to do whatever they need to do to win the game. And if they see that the run game is available and that you're slipping and you're not sound against the run, then they're going to run the ball and run it efficiently. I think and vice versa. If they have to pass the ball, then we all know that they can do that very well. They have the best quarterback in the league and top tandem in the league as far as receivers. And a tight end that is very dynamic, so they can do that. So I think they're a very well balanced team, and I think they kind of deceive you a little bit with the passing stats because they can run the ball very well.
Jason, how much longer do you want to play?
Oh, as long as I can physically do it. You know, mentally I'm fine. As long as I can physically do it and do it at a level that I think, you know, the game needs to be played at. You know, I don't want to be a hindrance to a team and hold a team back, you know. But I know I can play. I'm enjoying it. I'm feeling, you know, it's December, I'm feeling great and healthy, and I'll go as long as it all works out. You know, there's a lot of things coming up in the future here with the, you know, the CBA and all that stuff, and we don't know how that's going to play out, so it may be decided for me more so than me deciding for myself.
Will you revisit coming here?
We'll see what happens after the season's over. You know, I know my deal ends at the end of the year, and we'll reevaluate where we're at the end of the year and what the teams are wanting to do and take it from there. You know, you never close off any of your options. You don't burn any bridges, and always keep an open mind.
Thanks for joining us, Jason.
The Patriots are celebrating their 50th anniversary, and you can too at the Patriots Pro Shop. The Patriots Pro Shop is the place to find all the official 50th season merchandise. Everything from the 1963 jerseys the players are wearing this season to polos, sweatshirts, and hats featuring the original Pat Patriot logo. The Patriots Pro Shop has the widest selection of Patriots merchandise, including many 50th season items that you won't find anywhere else. Located next to Gillette Stadium at Patriot Place, the Patriots Pro Shop is open Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m. and Sundays from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. or 24 hours a day at PatriotsProShop.com. And if you order from PatriotsProShop.com, we'll ship your order for just $5. You'll know it's authentic when you order from PatriotsProShop.com because your item is being shipped from Gillette Stadium. Celebrate 50 years of Patriots football at the Patriots Pro Shop. If you were any closer, you'd be in the locker room.
Back here on the playbook, John Rook took off for the rest of the day, so you're stuck with the doctor. But as John promised, we're going to take you back to the Miami Dolphins conference calls. We're going to get set for a little listen-in right now with head coach Tony Sparano.
Hello.
Hey,
how are you?
Doing good. How are you?
All right. First thing I want to ask you was, the Saints did a pretty good job of containing both Welker and Moss, which, you know, not many teams have been able to do. When you saw that, is that any kind of like blueprint for you? And what did they do so well against those two guys?
Well, I don't think there's a blueprint for us that's any different than really anybody else has tried to do. With those guys. I mean, I've seen some double coverage in there. I've seen, a little bit of roll coverage where they're rolling to one guy or rolling the other guy, trying to double both receivers at times. But, those are all things that have been done. It's not the first time that Randy or Wes have been double teamed, in ball games, and they found ways to win in most of those situations.
How important is the pass rush to kind of stop those guys? I guess Moss excels in the deep balls, and if you're getting rush on him, then that makes that harder. Is that accurate to say? And you think the pass rush is a key to kind of?
Yeah, I think the pass rush is key. I think you have to be able to get some pressure on the quarterback in those situations, but you got to be careful. With what you do with Tom. I mean, Tom is such an intelligent player, and he gets the protections lined up very well. And if you're trying to come after him and you're trying to get pressure on him and he gets the thing lined up, you're going to get hurt. And that happened to us a little bit in game one.
How important is it, Tony, to get him off his spot? As a lot of coaches and analysts like to talk about, like getting him out of the pocket and closing off at least part of the field.
I think it's important. I really do. I think that, I'm sure, Tom likes it. Tom gets pretty comfortable in there like most quarterbacks do. And if you can get him off his spot, you can get him to move a little bit, then, certainly you're hoping that some of those location throws that he does such a great job with maybe are a little bit tougher to make.
Tony, what was it you saw from specifically the last game with the Patriots secondary, and what did you think allowed some of those big plays to happen?
Well, I thought I seen, first of all, and I know this through experience because we played them, but, New Orleans skilled people are outstanding. They do a great job with run after the catch, and I think that a couple plays were made there. I thought that Drew Brees did a great job of putting the ball on the back shoulder in a few situations, and those guys kind of ran with it. But, there was a couple opportunities there to maybe, you know, get him on the ground and look like, those guys just made some yards after the catch. And then, of course, you know, the one big play there obviously was a blown coverage.
When you're trying to, when you're looking at film and you're trying to judge and you see a performance like, you know, the Patriots played against the Jets where they get the four picks and then they have one like Monday night, how do you, as a, you know, a coach involved in the game plan and all that, decide how to attack them as far as like which, I guess, secondary you're going to see?
Well, I mean, you know, from our end, I think one of the important things is that, you know, we have to worry about what we can do here, with our people and what we do best when we're trying to attack them. But, I don't think that, you know, this is a copycat league. There's no question about it. You know, people try to steal other people's ideas, but I think that they have to fit a little bit of what you're trying to do. So, you know, I know the Patriots pretty well and that coaching staff, and I know that that team is going to be hitting on all cylinders when we play on Sunday.
And also, I've seen you guys on TV some, but if you could talk about how you've adjusted with the Wildcat without Ronnie there. I mean, does Ricky just do what he did, or how have you guys adjusted to that?
Well, Ricky's always, been the other guy involved in that. He's taken snaps in the Wildcat even when Ronnie was here, and, Ricky and Ronnie actually have switched spots on occasion. But Ricky understands the whole package, and, we obviously have other running backs that can come in the game and do Ricky's job. So that's pretty much the way we've been going about it here. And we've certainly figured out that all hands on deck is going to be important. So everybody kind of understands the roles there. And it's not one of those things that just because Ronnie's not out there, we don't do it. It depends on the game, depends on the situation during the game, but Ricky's capable of doing it.
Because of that, have you asked Chad Henne to assume a little more responsibility in the offense?
No, we haven't asked him to do any of that. I mean, we just, obviously, when you lose a player of Ronnie Brown's caliber, that's a large part of our offense. So, it has to get delegated someplace else, and some of it goes on Chad's plate, and some of it goes to Ricky, and some, to Fasano, and to the receivers, and to some of these people. So everybody's got a hand in picking up the slack, we've done a pretty good job of that right now in Ronnie's absence, short of last ball game, which even in that game, I think did some pretty good things with the football.
Tony, Jason Taylor earlier with us said that the defense hadn't been really doing their job in terms of finishing games off. What have you seen from your defense that has kind of showed itself in an inability to finish games?
Well, I mean, one of the things that that I think is important, first of all, I mean, I got to take some of the responsibility of that. I got to do a better job preparing the guys. I mean, it's everybody, it's players, it's coaches. We just got to do a better job that way of preparing and making sure that when we get to the fourth quarter that we're finishing some of these ball games. But I do think the fundamentals come into play, some of the techniques, some of the things that we do, for three quarters of the ball game. As we get into the fourth quarter, maybe guys get a little bit tired, a little bit fatigued, and we lose sight of some of those things. It's not my team, my team's effort. My team plays hard all the time. But it is some of the details. I think, that's probably what I can put my finger on most. And we also got to give credit to the other team, in some of these games. They've done a great job.
Tony, obviously you guys had pretty remarkable health last year. Are you satisfied with the way that your team's dealt with the injuries, whether it was Chad or Jason or Will or Ronnie or all of it as a whole? Are you happy with the team, way the team's just kind of handled all of that?
Yeah, I really am. I mean, I tell you what, I'm really proud of the guys down there. We've lost, obviously, some pretty good players here, but nobody's going to take it easy on you, nobody's going to cry for you or any of those things, so we don't use it as excuses. I mean, part of what we do here is we got to develop young players, and this just gets them out there, and we get a chance to see some of these guys play. So I've been pleased with how some of these guys have stepped up. You know, we had Channing Crowder down for a couple weeks. Reggie Tobor hopped in there and did a great job for us, and, you know, Will Allen out, and the two young corners are playing out there, and they're competing and getting a great education out there every single week. So, you know, Ferguson goes down, and, you know, Soliai steps in. So these guys have done a pretty good job for us, and it's teaching us an awful lot about, you know, about our football team in the future here.
Well, when you study the Patriots on film from week to week, are they more inclined than some teams to kind of change what they do on offense to match up, as opposed to maybe, you know, sort of getting their own identity or their own, you know, approach week to week?
No, I think that the Patriots do what they do. You know, I think that they do what they do really on both sides of the football. I don't think that they particularly care what we do. I think they're going to be good at what they do. And that's, you know, a little bit about how we are here. I mean, you know, we have to be concerned with what we do with our players and how well we can do it. So, people, you know, the Wildcat this and the Wildcat, well, it's something that we do, and we feel like we do it pretty well, so it's a little bit of a part of us. So, you know, I think that the Patriots are that way. I mean, you know, they have a specific style, and they're not going to change it based on what we do. They're going to do what they do and try to force the tempo that way.
How has Ted Ginn bounced back, if at all, from the early season criticism he faced?
No, I think he's bounced back very, very well. I mean, I think that, you know, you look at what, probably at the time that, you know, that Teddy was dealing with the most criticism from the outside was, you know, prior to our Jet game, and then he came back in that game, and he returned two kicks for a touchdown, and you know, was just critical and pivotal the result of that football game, and little by little he's been getting better and better each week, and has made some plays for us. I mean, the guy, I believe going into last week, was leading the league in returns and was catching the ball pretty well for us out there when given the opportunity.
He's obviously an elite physical player. What does he need to do to take it to the next level as a wide receiver?
Well, one of the things is sometimes, you know, you forget that these guys are young, and you know, Teddy is a young player, so from his end, when we came in here as a coaching staff to where we are right now, Teddy's taken tremendous strides. He's really grown an awful lot that way, you know, in releases and understanding coverages and the game slowing down for him so he can play faster. Those things have all been important. So I think he needs to just continue to do those things here, which, you know, Carl Durrell does a great job with him, and, you know, we're getting better and better with him.